I can't have that much swearing on air because it's school funded.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. I will. Okay. I will try.
If it slips out anyway, it's no problem.
Yeah, yeah, I work with a spirit who has really. She has a foul mouth.
I believe it. I believe it. And so I'll just introduce us and we can get going.
Okay.
Good afternoon, my glimmering goth apologist. Today is Wednesday, the 16th of 2015, and I'm your host, Pratel Mabarak. This is Gothropology, an anthropology and psychology-centric show with a goth twist. That song was Screamin' Runaway by the Gothic Archies, and today my guest is Griffin Kedd, manager and teacher at the Green Man Store in West Hollywood, in North Hollywood. And how else would you like to be introduced? I wasn't quite sure if I should take any other liberties with that.
I'm basically a professional witch. I've been practicing for 40 years. I'm the witch father of the Kedd tradition line. And a family man, how's that?
All right, that works for me. I was going to say I've been practicing for longer than I've been alive, but I think that puts it quite well. So basically today, we're here to talk about the reason for the season, Yule and Saturnalia, as it were. So basically, the holiday meaning, its traditions, and what we're really carrying into the world when we celebrate it. So if you could start, first off, about like what Yule is and your approach towards how you celebrate it.
The term Yule comes from the, I think maybe even originally Scandinavian, meaning wheel. And it's a nod to the fact that the wheel of the year goes from midwinter to midwinter, and Yule is the marking point, the longest night. It is the marking point of the winter solstice. And so Yule really is tied into the winter solstice event, although it tends to speak more to the festival of celebration that surrounds that event.
Okay.
It's a celestial event, much like Midsummer is, and the two equinoxes, so very often tied in with Midsummer and with the spring and autumn equinox.
Okay. So what specific cultural backgrounds, per se, do you draw from?
Well, Yule really has been one of those events, being the longest night and the turning point of the sun, one of those events that I think nearly every culture and religion in history has their own interpretation, their own approach to. So it's really not unique to pagan whatsoever.
Right.
But in drawing from culture, I tend to look at... I look at some of the research that's been done in terms of old practices, but mostly I look to my own experience of the spirit, the manner in which I approach my paganism and my practices is very much to look to the spirit of what resides within my culture and within my own spirit and pull forward what speaks to me. And I think that no matter what tradition you come from, no matter what religion you practice, the solstice event really has a spirit of family and hearth and community at the center.
Okay. So is that sort of a hint of what people can look forward to at the Green Man's Yule ritual?
Oh, we give good Yule. Oh, do we give good Yule? I've incorporated an element there, the Yule tree, which... was common in certain Germanic traditions, but wasn't really common in Britain, where I grew up, mm-hmm. until the Victorian period. And they call it a Christmas tree there, but of course, you know, Christmas is just another way of expressing Yule, right? Yuletide. Mm-hmm. Many of the old pagan traditions have been worked through a Christian cosmological filter. The Yule celebration today, we recognize as one of its symbols being the Yule tree, which is really an Axis Mundi symbol, which is the central spindle of creation around which all life revolves. And its place in cosmology is at the center of the tribe, the center of the community. And so it becomes that Axis Mundi that unites heaven and earth around which the tribe or the family gathers. And many of the symbols hung on it is the lights, because this is very much about bringing light into the darkest night. The star at the top of the tree, representative of the pole star.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you would say that the tinsel that would go on it could be attributed to like the serpents upon the tree, which bring down inspiration from heaven to earth, like the lightning stroke as it hits the earth from heaven. The globes that you put on there could be representative of also celestial bodies like planets and things. So there's lots of ways of looking at it in a celestial manner in the way in which it presents. In the old days, it was the Christmas wreath that they used to use, which is like a Vesica Pisces type symbol of like an eye or the vulva. Has that representation of mediation from divine into the realm of matter through a ring, through the circle of eternity. But it's been replaced by the yule tree in the 20th century as being, you know, the most common representation for yule. And at the Green Man, we'll be dancing around the yule tree. We will sing carols and we will wassail the tree by banging its trunk and quickening the life force within it and using that life force to weave its magic through the congregation.
Okay.
We will take ribbons and we will tie knots in them for our wishes for the future and to bring closure to things of the past. And we will decorate the tree with our ribbons and then we will put living candles on it. And we will do a cone. We will do a magical working and raise energy around the Axis Mundi, and then we will wassail and drink and celebrate and be, you know, a bawdy pagan mob.
There's much nodding in the room as this is being said.
We have lots of fun.
I hear you, and I believe it.
Yeah.
So, how would you elaborate on also the idea that Yule is also, it's still in the dark times, it's still in the dying times.
It's the midpoint, actually, in the dark time. Dark time really starts at Hallows, Samhain, and will go through to Limbok or Candlemas. And when you're in the dark time, then basically you can say this is a time that is ruled by the disincarnate spirit. So that the life on Earth in the realm of matter is not animated during this period, is either dead or dying or asleep in rest, and will be reawakened with the shift of light that comes at Imbolc. That stimulates the dragon forces in the land, and it will reawaken. And the midpoint that turns around this whole process of going into the dark and then back out turns around on the actual Yule event, because this is the turning point of light. Between Yule and Imbolc, the light is going to be an increase, and it is the shift in light as it strikes the earth that brings about the awakening, not the warmth, not the turning of the season. The season shifts in response to the shifting of the light. So it's very much an event of a light shift that happens at Yule.
Okay. So, and also, there's a lot of writing, especially in contemporary pagan thought, that most of the traditions that we're familiar with in terms of Christmas and the holiday season now come from both Yule and Saturnalia, which you guys are at the Green Man are having two distinct celebrations for.
Yeah, last week we also had a Krampus ritual.
Indeed.
The whole winter tide, which goes from Hallows through to Imbolc, because it's ruled by incorporate spirit, by the non-corporeal spirit, it's a time that goes in contradiction to the sun. It goes in contradiction to order, to the realm of the living, and it's very much a time of where spirit rules in contradiction to the forward motion of time. So we look at it as a time of misrule where anything that doesn't hold its own sense of accord and order, anything that doesn't hold with the traditions and the memories and hold tight to the family and the legacy that we pass down through our observing of the festivities, those who aren't in accord will get pulled apart by the forces of misrule. This is why even in the old days at Yule, Yuletide or Christmas, you would see old Christmas cards from the Victorian period that would be sometimes somewhat sinister and look like more like gags. In actual fact, when I was a kid, it would be traditional to have both, you know, good presents at Yule, but also gag presents that were like curses. And the reason is because if you give somebody something that celebrates the spirit of misrule, then misrule is not going to require to take over your life. It's defensive. I will honor the spirit of misrule, and then misrule won't hunt me down and destroy my life. So it's an observation of the spirit that needs to be satiated.
Okay, and in some ways, I was thinking also about across cultures as well, in in the Welsh, however you want to put it, they have the nightmare, I don't know how to pronounce it, but
the Marilu.
That's it. Who comes in and give them booze and they leave, been doing it right.
This is where, if you go into the old Krampus was the same kind of thing. It was the Yule Goat figure that would come and bang on the door and require you to be observing the festivities. I mean, we see in the Victorian period, he comes and takes away naughty children, but I think that's a recent overlay that shows how he has been incorporated into the culture of Christianity and Christmas has become very child-centric with Santa Claus. And so the idea of Krampus actually tracking down the children, taking the children away, I think has become ended up in its cultural expression. But originally, I think Krampus was there to make sure that everybody observed the festivities of the upcoming Yule, that they were true to the common folk memories and the order of the pack, the order of the tribe, the order of the community, of the family, so that you held tight and you took care of each other, you watched each other's back, and you carried on the legacy and the tradition from the past. If you didn't, then Krampus would take you away because you were in violation of that harmony. You're in violation of the legacy. And those people that didn't do that, like a wolf would cull off the weak link, Krampus would take away the dissonant and get rid of them.
Okay.
And so the whole idea of Misrule coming and stalking and taking you away, like with Krampus, is really about keeping the spirit of the legacy alive and strong and powerful at the heart of the family, the heart of the tribe, the heart of the congregation, of the community.
Okay, so overall, it could kind of be said that the central point of Yule is family and community to a point.
Right, and so through the whole wintertide, you've got different observances, like with Krampus that comes and challenges at the door. You've got the Marilu who comes and challenges at the door. Your Pukka or Buka. You've got also Punch and Judy. Hmm. Punch and Judy, which is a jester figure, like a Saturnalian pauper, will come in the colors of Venus, and he will come into the house and make complete travesty of the space. He would turn everything upside down. His wife coming in with the rolling pin would be wanting to beat him up because he's a bad man, and she would bring additional mayhem, at the same time be apologizing profusely for making such a mess. Mm-hmm. And then you might even get the crocodile, which is always chasing and trying to take him down. The crocodile being symbolic of the primal underlying draconic forces that wait for us in the darkness. In, you could say, the dragon of Misrule, the crocodile.
Okay.
And he's always chasing Punch as well. You could even equate that over into like Pan. Peter Pan, where again with the pirate, the bad man, who is being chased by the crocodile. It's another way of looking at this whole story. It keeps going on and on. We keep seeing the same repeating themes where the integrity of the spirit and the virtue of the community is constantly being pushed into an active state by the challenge of the Lord of Misrule or the creature that comes and challenges and threatens to take anything away that doesn't express virtue.
Okay. So also, I've sort of heard Saturnalia compared to the festivities in honor of Bacchus. And I'm sort of, I'm kind of curious, because on the one hand, just sort of celebration in general and getting drunk in general doesn't really strike me as what's going on with Saturnalia. So for people who aren't too familiar with the distinctions, could you go in a bit more in depth there?
Well, think about to run it in sequence, you've got at Samhain, at Hallows, you've got all of the lost dead who have not crossed over into the ancestral realm, who are out of accord with order, being rounded up by the Wild Hunt and taken to the underworld and put back straight into order. You've got Krampus, who comes then at the beginning of December, and does the same thing with the miscreants, who are outcasts from society, who are rebels, who are potentially dangerous to the order and the harmony of the community that needs to weather through the dark time and take care of each other. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Yule, where everybody comes together at the hearth, and even while we still have mithril circling around our ears, we hold on to each other and celebrate the beauty and the love of family, of community. And at the time when we probably need to hang on to things the hardest, we start giving each other gifts. We start showing each other our fear by opening our hands with love and expression of gifts. So it's a very sort of beautiful harmony event of family, really, that's expressed at Yule.
Okay.
And then right after, I celebrate, like in Britain, we have Boxing Day. Now, Boxing Day is when the servants are served by the masters. This is where they get to have their Christmas in the Victorian days, upstairs and downstairs. But back in the old days, this would be a time when the masters would serve the servants in order to celebrate mithril. They would want to turn the universe on its head, again, to satiate mithril, because Saturn is really the divine presence of order. And because the tides and the pendulum always swings, if things are prosperous and things are in harmony and we are affluent and our society flourishes, then the pendulum swings against us, wanting to bring about balance by bringing misrule and devastation and downfall into our lives. And we want to continue being positive and affluent and productive. And so we need to satiate that spirit, that pendulum, without allowing it to take our society and our community down. We do that by celebrating misrule, which is to celebrate disorder, chaos. And to do that, we do cross-dressing, we turn our clothes inside out, we have parties where people, you know, indulge in craziness, in lunacy. All the things that we would normally want to hold at arm's length and say, oh, that's dangerous, we need to hold to order. All of those things that are a little taboo, we tend to embrace the Saturnalia and say, okay, let's have some fun with this. Let's bring this element into our life so it doesn't terrify us. We're going to actually celebrate it so that it doesn't become necessarily part of our mundane world.
Okay, and on that vein, is there any sort of, because I haven't attended any of you guys' Saturnalias yet, even though I plan to, do you guys do anything in terms of keeping that, all of that, honoring the mithril and everything that we want separate? Do you make a sort of directed effort to keep that working separate from the lives of the individuals partaking in it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, whereas Yule, we bring everybody together, including kids, and we love to have kids at Yule. We bring together and we celebrate the family, we celebrate the spirit of unity and harmony and the legacy of our ancestors and the legacy that we're going to pass down to our children. All of this is the focal point. Mm-hmm. Then we come to mithril, and we don't want the children there because we don't want to screw with their heads and put them in therapy for decades. We want to, men want to dress up in women's clothing and outlandish outfits and people want to do outlandish things. And so we tend to say whatever happens at Saturnalia stays at Saturnalia.
Gotcha.
It needs to be a closed working where people can indulge in chaos, indulge in madness for one day. And so everything is backwards. Whereas normally at the Green Man, we charge people or we ask for a donation to come to rituals. At the Saturnalia, we give them a penny.
Mm-hmm.
When they come to the Saturnalia, we normally say no drinking and no celebrating or food before ritual. We definitely get drunk and eat ourselves silly before we do ritual. And then the ritual is a complete disaster. I mean, it's chaos. Very often the ritual gets so out of hand that I've got a huge gong I use to try and bring some kind of closure to it because it completely goes into disaster.
Okay.
We try and do things of like there's a gurning thing that we do in Britain where you put your head through the collar of a draft horse and pull the ugliest face you can rather than a beauty contest. We do the same thing sticking our head through a toilet seat and pulling a face.
Okay. Again, Carrie's nodding. I believe you.
We do all kinds of things that we can come up with that basically is going to celebrate the upside down topsy turvy world of mithril.
Okay. So, how should people conceive of that when they've done with ritual and they've gone home? How should they think about that?
I often say to people, you know, if you're going to come to a first ritual, come to Yule. Come celebrate the harmony and the beauty of what we carry. Don't come to Saturnalia. Saturnalia is going to completely mess with your head and you're going to say, what the hell are these crazy people about? we hope that the misrule is going to leave us alone for the rest of the year when we do this ritual. So people, when they do this ritual, they do it very specifically for a reason. They have a motive to do it. They don't do it because they want to be crazy loons. They do it because they want it as a magical working to help them keep order in their lives for the coming year, so they don't get things taken away from them.
Okay.
So if they come with that understanding, then they can work it sincerely as a magical working. If you don't understand what it's about, then it's just a crazy party. And that really doesn't work. There's no magic in that. There's no spirit in it. And everything that we do when it comes to rituals, even when we're doing really, you know, crazy fun stuff, there still has to be spirit in it. It still needs to be hold virtue for what it's supposed to be. The spirit needs to be true. And so I would say, you know, anybody that comes to any ritual, yeah, we enjoy our practices. We enjoy our rituals. We enjoy our religion. If you can't laugh and have fun, then why do it, you know? But at the same time, must always be true and hold virtue with what we do. We can never just do it because it's fun. It has to have a function that goes deeper and truer to the core of who we are.
So would you say that that's what brings the emergence of spirit within workings, instead of just sort of, as you say, like just partying for no cause?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to look at it this way. So, I mean, I love to go to the movies and see a really good movie that spent millions of dollars and great actors and music. I mean, I can immerse myself in that whole experience. Wouldn't you rather go and spend 2-3 hours immersing yourself in that kind of experience, or go to the theater or the opera or anything like that and get that kind of full-on designed experience if all you're wanting to do is be entertained?
Right.
When you go to ritual, it's not to go and watch people do ritual. It's to go and experience the awakening of spirit. You want ritual to change your universe. You want to come away feeling that you have deeper insight, that the world you live in is wider, that has more color, there's more depth to the universe. Mm-hmm. It needs to make a difference in your life. And so the awakening of spirit is really the key reason for doing all of this kind of ritual. You want to come away with this, with the feeling that you've actually accomplished a little bit of awakening.
Okay. And, you know, that's funny because I think sometimes about how pagans and whatever, the long list of labels I could use, don't really missionize. It's absolutely the opposite with a lot of people. You kind of have to work to find or you have to want to find it as well, as opposed to Christians or the major religions, where they will try and seek people out and intentionally look for people who need a community in order to sort of snatch them. This is just my opinion. But with paganism, you don't really find that, especially for the more substantial groups that I've come into contact with. And I think a lot of that, let me see how to put it. It's the point is that we don't really want to missionize. And the reason that I actually don't, invite all of my friends to with the Druids, I don't invite everyone to every single thing we do, because I think that you should want to. And if you do just invite everyone and make it, you know, the most visible thing in the world, you will get people who are looking for a freak show and who are looking for, let's go watch the circus. And that kind of puts a serious damper on things for me, at least. And I think it would definitely put a damper on the effectiveness of whatever you're trying to do. In addition to how people feel about going, so.
Well, the origins of paganism, if you think about paganism historically, the Pagani was a term basically brought about to describe the people of the villages in outside of the main city, where they wasn't practicing the high church of whatever the royalty was doing, whatever the high church was doing. They did their own version of it in the local churches, but they incorporated the land spirits that they were working with, because their daily life was enmeshed with their relationships with the spirits of the land. And so their basic practices were very shamanic, in the sense of having relationships with simple spirits of the land. Mm-hmm. And for this, they were branded, you know, Pagani. But their daily lives was very much tied into growing things and having a relationship with spirits and husbandry over animals, you know, cutting animals' throats and making meat. And it was farming. I mean, there was a very agricultural community. Most neo-pagans today can't grow diddly squat. You ask them to, you know, cut the throat of a chicken, they would go screaming. You know, we go to the supermarket, we pick up our food there. we're like regular people. I don't think that that the neo-pagan is a religion in the same sense that that Christianity or any of the mainstream religions are religions. They don't hold to a unified theology, a cosmology, an understanding of God. I look at the pagan community of today a little bit more like you would look at secular Judaism, where people identify as Jewish as a culture, sometimes a marginalized minority culture, but they hold together as a culture rather than as practicing people of a religion. Many pagans are very free thinking. They approach their life as a philosophy. They approach it as a art form. They work with magic. They work with their relationships with spirits as a way of dealing with their relationship with the world. But they don't look at it in the religious sense. So I don't see paganism as being a religion the same sense as most people understand religion in the West, with Christianity and Islam and any of those kinds of religions. We're much more heretics in our relationship because we go directly into relationships with spirits rather than working through a priesthood. And we're very much free thinkers. So I look at paganism as a cultural, social movement for free thinking artists who work with spirits as their paint, and a cosmos as their canvas.
So what makes religion, in your opinion? I mean, outside of the context of monotheism and more.
You got to be so careful because, unfortunately, you know, many pagans are intellectuals, and if they and everyone, every single pagan I know has at least three opinions that are battling for rulership in their heads.
Yes.
And so as soon as you start discussing anything in a definitive, you're going to have 3,000 opinions, and everybody's going to use semantics to argue why theirs is the right one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like everybody else in that sense. So to say, you know, what makes a religion? I could say, well, to me, I think most people look at a religion as worship and liturgy, following a specific dictate of priesthood, of a church, of scriptures, that there is a specific cosmology and story that's being presented, and a priesthood who says this is the correct manner in which to follow this cosmology and to practice in relationship with the divine, mediated through this priesthood. And that is basically what I call mainstream religion. But people could say, well, religion is just daily practice. I mean, if you do a repetitive practice in a relationship with a divine spirit, you got a religion right there. And technically that is true, which is why I look at paganism as a practice that should be protected as a religion, because we do have a relationship with the divine, and to people outside of our practices, they would see it as an act of faith, even though we tend to look at it more as relationships with reality, just a more subtle level of reality.
Okay.
But mainstream religion is really, for me, defined by churchianity, and churchianity comes in all forms of temple, where there's a priesthood, where there's a liturgy, where there is a congregation following the dictates of some ordered system, then you've got a religion.
Okay. So I guess that's sort of where pagan practice, like even when most people see it, some of it might go a bit over their heads, because while there is an idea of clergy, and there definitely are obviously many traditions where, you know, not just anyone can jump up and do what that person is doing, but at the same time, in a lot of it, it's not so separated, and it's not so where you'll have like a priest or a pastor or a rabbi who says this is the exact word and you have to follow it this way. It's, you might take you a while, but you can be the clergy. And, you know, I guess that's distinction. I mean,
they say it's a tradition of clergy, but I always say to people, you know, if you're a clergy, then where's your congregation? And, you know, you're going to have, you know, a whole tribe of clergy, but if there's no congregation, then who are you clergy for?
Right.
So, I mean, we do weddings and we do funerals and baptisms, and we take turns in working in the center, mediating in the traditions that we work with. So we work for each other in that sense. But it's not the same idea as having a full-time clergy. I wish they did, because I'd like to get paid, you know, for all the work that I do, you know. But there's not. That's not the way we're structured.
That's a fair point. I think also in the sense that you're saying that we serve each other, I think that is kind of the point of a lot of it. And when you are learning how to do that and how to hold center and how, you know, to do good ritual, it shouldn't be for the attention or the possible charisma or whatever, but it's more about if there is a group, someone needs to be able to do that. So it's more like as need dictates. And, you know, and a lot of the time people do take turns, and I know with Raven's Cry, we have different leaders almost every time. So
I think that when you're trying to walk this path, it's not really a lazy person's spirituality. If you're really going to get anything out of it, you've got to engage. We work with many of the same mysteries that the other religions would work with, mm-hmm. in terms of the holy days and the mysteries that are associated with it. We tend to look at it more as a way of getting insight into deeper understanding, because we're trying to bring about evolution of spirit through working these mysteries. And so if you're actively doing these rituals to bring about that kind of evolution of spirit, you will find the world start to change around you, because the spirit starts to change the universe that you live in. You'll come a point where you need to start mediating more than what you are discovering from within yourself, where spirit's going to want to start mediating through you. And for you to continue growing, at a certain point, you've got to become the mediator of what you are in connection with. Mm-hmm. And at that point, that's when you do ritual. That's when you stand in the center. When you're not there because you're doing it for you, but you're doing it to mediate what you are in connection with. And through mediating that connection, you continue to grow, which you couldn't do if you was just doing it for yourself.
Okay. So what sort of, I'm trying to think of a specific question, and also to sort of draw back to the
Get back to Yule.
Yeah. To draw back to the reason for the season.
Right.
So how would you say your approach with having your rituals now is different from maybe when you started?
Oh, night and day. When I first started, I was trying to find ways to find definitive answers. I think the biggest difference is I was trying to lock it all down and find the truth so I could codify it and own it and say, yeah, I got it, you know. And 40 years later, I'm still every year reinventing it, because the tides change and I've changed and the universe I live in has changed. And so it expresses itself differently and I explore it differently. And today I am really happy that the exploration of this cosmos is never ending, and that I will never own the truth, and that I will never have a definitive answer. I think that's the gift of the path that I'm on, is that it's never ending.
That's a good way to put it. Thank you. And I know the clock here is behind by, and it's never accurate, but I think we've got about 10 or 15 more minutes.
All right.
For my mental notes. Let's think. So basically, and to get back a little bit to what you were saying, so did you approach paganism as looking for, you know, who created what, or why are things this way, or what was your questions there a bit, if you don't mind my asking?
I grew up in an interesting family that put a set of tarot cards in my hands when I was a kid. My mum sent me to a spiritualist that she went and had an encounter with, and I finished up in a house full of witches that seemed to make more sense to me than anybody else I'd ever met in my life. Exploring the universe experientially through what we could experience together in communion with spirit, it was far from a religion. It was really occultist in nature when I first started. It was trying to get a sense of the universe that I had just cracked the door to in my perceptions. Really wasn't looking for the answers of you know, what's the meaning of the universe or anything. I was just really trying to find people of like mind to explore what I found naturally within me.
Okay.
My connection with the pagan community didn't happen for more than a decade later. And when that happened, I was, you know, very excited, because I suddenly found that there was a whole movement of people that potentially could be, you know, my peeps. And I, up to that point, had only met the occasional one or two strange person that uh, that I encountered, and we did work together, and then we kind of drifted away. And so it was always very transitory with individuals up until I finally found out that there was this whole community of people that got together and celebrated. And it was only at that point when I started looking at the bigger picture of the Sabbats and the festivals and the legacy of the pagan community, and an exploration of that, trying to understand what that was about, and to bring that in alignment with my understanding of the tides and the seasons, and how it felt and what I experienced directly in those periods, is what started to provoke me in an exploration of making sense of it all.
Okay, so how would you?
But more community. When I say the pagan community, it's all about community. And that's really, for me, the strength of why what I went for. More than looking for God, I went looking for people.
That's fair. Okay. So what do you think people are looking for when they come to the Green Man for your classes or for the rituals that you guys hold?
People come for many different reasons. Sometimes people come because they feel at sea, at a loss as to how to get a handle on their lives. They feel that they're looking for tools, for ways of trying to make sense of it. They come because someone told them there was something fun or interesting. They come for curiosity. They come to want to feel a sense of power, that they have some power to do something about their destiny and fate. They come because they're in revolution against the religion they was raised in that they never felt they was part of. There are so many different reasons why people land there. I think what brings people to the Green Man and what lands them on the path is seldom what keeps them there.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they discover what it's really about, it's almost like their spirit had a sense of what this path was about, but their ego didn't. And so whatever it took to get them in the door was what happened.
Okay.
But once they were in, their spirit said, "Oh, yes, this is what I want. This is where I'm. This is, this makes sense to me. This is home."
Okay. Cool. It's sort of it's kind of curious because sometimes I'll go along and sort of meet people who are looking to or they'll find me who are looking to get more involved in, I mean, whether they call it paganism or the craft or the occult or whatever. There's a variety of reasons, even in the admittedly probably fewer people that I've encountered. I mean, the most recent woman was definitely a lot older than me, and things like astrology knew a lot more than I did. But the reason that she was looking for community was more for like emotional things that had happened across her life. And I guess that sort of ties into the wanting some sort of power over your own destiny.
Yeah, there's a lot of people come for that reason. They come and they want mojo bags done and spell candles done. And a lot of people who feel disempowered, a lot of people who have suffered in their lives, and they want healing. They want a healing environment, especially women that have been disenfranchised, abused, either, you know, by parents or by spouses or by society as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them find that within the pagan community, we honor and cherish the women and the spirit of the divine female. And so that is something that becomes a haven for women looking for that kind of healing.
Very true.
And this is all really great. I mean, but once you're inside the pagan community, you're going to find so many different choices. There are people that will go into groups or people that will go into particular sectors of the pagan community that's very nurturing and supportive and gives them that kind of safe community.
Sure.
And then there's other groups that, like the one that I work with, that basically says, you know, get all your healing done and then come and we'll screw your life up because we're all about evolution and
right.
messing with you. And we're looking to pull away the safety net. And
right.
so it really depends on where you're at, what you're looking for, and where your spirit's going to lead you.
Okay. So what can we look forward to in terms of events at the Green Man, aside from after Yule and Saturnalia?
Well, we're going to have Yule and Saturnalia. We have a grove of people who have been becoming sort of central figures at the Green Man, coming to classes, coming to rituals, engaging in a lot of the work that we're doing there, who have really found that they have grown and found community that means something and feel that they can actually do real work that makes a difference to their lives. And from that, they have formed this group that is for the next year going to be doing nearly monthly moon workings, mm-hmm. so that they can work in the center together with us and start to push the envelope a little further in those practices. So we're going to have a lot of moon workings. We have the ADF, the Druids, come in to do some of our Sabbats. Very beautiful, a lot more pagan, spiritual oriented. The ADF are a lot more into exploring the different old philosophies and religious practices of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they do many different kinds of rituals, very beautiful rituals. We do more power workings, and Crystal, who comes, has been coming for years to many of my rituals. She says that I do ritual for the AD, what's it called? The attention deficit.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Because I like to get in there. I like to, you know, punch it hard, have a lot of fun, get real work done, leave people tweaking and buzzing from the experience, hopefully mesh that's their head a little bit, and then mm-hmm. And then let's go feast. You know?
That's actually a big difference that I noticed, because my first exposure to any kind of public rituals was through ADF, and I was like, wow, people are doing things, and they're hands-on. And then after, I'm sort of someone that I like to, by virtue, I want to put every last, if I physically can still move, I want to be still moving. But then afterward, when I actually at Samhain this time, hi Tom, my mentor, told me afterward, and I was like, well, I have all this energy, I want to do more. And he's like, you know, you're not supposed to be exhausted after every single time. And I was like, that's no. But then I've been getting used to that. Mm-hmm. And I think because a lot of it is really Raven's Cry meets at most once a month.
All right.
And so I want to really get as much out of it as I can. But then when you do things more regularly, it's like, okay, I can calm down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also we don't, and it's true, like we definitely, the intention isn't so much to do conscious energy working. It's to observe the gods and, you know, it's pretty reverence oriented. We do incorporate the ancestors and the deities and whatnot. But it does leave also a lot of room to for individual members to have complementary practices, whether that be traditional witchcraft or atheism or whatever it is that suits people. So
there's a lot more of the ADF is an observance of the gods and of the rituals. And then there's us who just basically we look at the spirits as family members, and we like to provoke them and have them provoke us, and so we play rough, you know, and we like that.
I noticed.
And then we have the reclaimers, who are a wonderful bunch of Wiccans. This is people come out of the Starhawk tradition,
mm-hmm.
and they're very goddess oriented. So people that are really into the divine feminine energy really should check out the reclaiming people. They come and work a lot at the store. We love them. They're a really beautiful, beautiful group. Beautiful.
I noticed them at Pagan Pride this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're awesome. Awesome people.
Okay. So, and let me think. We probably are coming closer to the end of the episode, but
I would just also say the other mm-hmm. thing that's coming at the Green Man, I keep plugging it, is we do classes nearly daily. And that is a big thing, because a lot of the rituals and a lot of the people that come in the door,
mm-hmm.
their biggest problem is that they don't know which way to go. They don't know how the path is going to unfold before them. And coming to rituals gives them some exposure. Mm-hmm. But if they want to really understand more, then they need to start coming to classes. And so we offer an enormous variety of classes at the store so that people can get a sense of what this is all about. Because it does take some time and some work and some exploration to really get to grips with it. And they're fascinating subjects, so they're fun as well, but we give really good classes.
What's coming up next week in terms of classes?
Actually, we've got Stephen Skinner, who is a very well-known magician and has written some of the most respected books on Goetic magic and high magic. He is coming, ceremonial magic, he's coming to do a presentation on Greco magic traditions. So we've got him coming in. I'm finishing off a series, Awakening the Witch Blood, which has been absolutely mind-blowing. We're just finishing off, actually tomorrow, a series on the apothecary, herbal magic. We have scrying classes coming up. We have tarot classes coming up.
So where can these people find out how to attend these and the details and everything?
Our website has a pretty good layout. Either check out our Facebook page, The Green Man Store, or our website, which is thegreenmanstore.com. And you can look at our calendar of events and our classes and what we have to present.
Fantastic. So is there anything else you'd like to plug in there before we sign off?
No, I think I got it all, didn't I?
I think I did. Okay, so actually, let me try and remember. I want to say Saturnalia is the 26th.
The Saturnalia is the 26th. It's the day after Christmas Day.
Right. And Yule is this weekend.
Yule is actually Saturday. It's 8 o'clock. And like I said, it's going to be a really beautiful gathering. And probably for people that have never done Yule, this is the one to come for the first time. We tell even people who have been for years, say, if you've got family members who wonder what the hell is it you do, bring them to Yule, because they will become less intimidated by what you do when they see the spirit of the family that we have.
And that's fantastic. And that's what I've been telling my mom, except about Raven's Cries, Yule, because I'm like, what's the most gentle way to ease someone into it? But anyway, now you guys know, I also will be at Yule and pretty much a lot. So anyway, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Ask me back anytime.
Thank you very much. I just might. So this has been Bertel Mabarak and Griffin Cad for Gothropology. You can find information on Griffin's classes at The Green Man Online on Facebook. Oh my goodness, that's my phone. And call The Green Man Store to reserve tickets. So stay tuned on Facebook and Twitter for a future guest. Have a safe and blessed Yule. And just remember, only 16 days and 10 months until Halloween.
But wait till you meet his accomplices. When you see Count Olaf, you're suddenly full of disgust and despair and dismay. In the whole of the soul of Count Olaf, there's no love. When you see Count Olaf, count to zero, then scream and run away. Scream, scream, scream and run away. Run, 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 run. Or die, 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 die. Two women with powdered white faces, and one long-nosed bald man with warts. Things worsen and worsen as a hook-handed person and others with nastier parts. This evil and unpleasant group, complete Count Olaf's acting true. The goal of Count Olaf is getting control of the fortunes of urchins and orphans, alright. I mean horrors, Count Olaf is no laughing matter. When you see Count Olaf, count to zero, then scream and run away.